Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Kim Grinnells of Dogman.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. It's go time. It's game day. 5:45 kickoff in Seattle, 7:45 in NOLA in New Orleans, and it's been building day by day. I've been down here since I had the red eye out on Christmas night and got here early on the 26th, and I've been here ever since. And just every day, it just seems like more and more people are coming in, more media, more fans. You're seeing more purple. You're seeing more burnt orange, and you're seeing more setups outside the New Year's Eve parade. So my buddy came in last night on the Alaska Airlines flight, and sounds like it was 99% UW fans. And the captain started the cheering on the flights, and then he said that they ended that. They capped it off by ordering around for the entire flight. So everybody got a free drink on Alaska Airlines on the flight down yesterday, which I thought was pretty cool. So again, we're just starting to see more and more influx of Husky fans and Texas fans. And it hasn't been, you know, you guys, and you can probably tell just on the outside, but I'm not seeing a lot of trash talk or disrespect, you know, from the fan base. Not like when you play both of these teams and both of these fan bases have a mutual respect for each other.
Yeah, they definitely do. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what you said at the end there because you cut out, Kim, but yeah, I think to be honest with you, I think it's just been confidence from both fan bases. I don't think it's been a lot of, especially from the Washington fan base. I mean, they're not going to say Texas shouldn't belong there. I mean, that'd just be dumb. But from the Texas fan base, I think they're obviously, if they're not cautiously optimistic, they're just optimistic that they have the speed, they have the horses, they have the size, especially up front on the offensive and defensive lines to get the job done. So I think they've got obviously plenty of reasons to be excited about tonight's game.
What are you seeing out there, Scott?
Well, you know, I've actually just been over on several message boards, like the Ohio State message board, the even the Michigan message board, Michigan State. I've gone to Oregon State, USC board, and everybody, you know, a lot of the rivals out here, especially, I wouldn't expect anything less from Oregon because I wouldn't expect less from Washington fans if Oregon was in the same spot. But, you know, they're like, you know, Washington's going to get run out of the, you know, off the field by Texas and everything like that. And they're too big and Washington can't handle it. But most everybody seems to think that, you know, that doesn't have an absolute hate for Washington. Most everybody has respect for what Washington did this year. They think Washington's offense is pretty dang explosive, but they also have fallen into what a lot of people, a lot of national pundits and analysts think about what Washington and Texas's matchup is going to come down to. And it's going to come down to the offensive and defensive lines. And they feel that just Texas is going to be too physical for Washington. Well, guess what? Everybody thought Oregon was too physical for Washington, and Washington handled that. So I think a lot of people have respect for what Washington's done, but they still think Texas is the better team.
Hey, Chris, just down here getting a chance to talk to Quint Ewers a little bit. He seemed pretty mild-mannered, pretty low-key. Going against this Washington defense, he's definitely got some weapons, especially with Xavier Worthy out there. But it sounds like Xavier Worthy's not 100%.
Well, we talked a little bit about this earlier this week. You saw him walking around. You talked to him a little bit. It didn't look like he was limping around or didn't look like he – I mean, let's put it this way. If you just saw him walking around, things like that, would you have thought that he was less than 100%?
No, but that doesn't mean, you know, he is 100% on his cuts. It doesn't mean he's 100% on his hamstrings, you know, running full speed. But yes, I said a little bit earlier this week, he was a little bit bigger than I anticipated. He's 6'6", 6'1". I don't remember him being that big. So he's a little bit bigger than I anticipated. But, you know, going against this Washington defense, and the thing that scares me about this Texas offense is Washington a lot of the time has had an inability to stop people on third down.
Yeah, no, that's true. And it starts up front for Texas. I mean, they've got four offensive linemen that have at least 25 career starts, including their center, Jake Majors, who's actually started 40 straight games for Texas. So, you know, I mean, they've got a really good line on their own. If I remember correctly, Scott, you can correct me, but I think weren't they a finalist for the Joe Moore Award, the award that Washington won?
I think they were, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I mean, it's not like Washington's defense is going to be going up against Swiss cheese up front. I mean, these guys are experienced and they're big, and they've been playing really, really well together, especially the last few games where basically they just haven't been stopped on offense. So you've got to look at that matchup first, and it really underscores just how important a guy like Tuli Lotuiegasanoa is up front to try to help kind of stem whatever Texas is going to try to do running the ball in terms of, you know, they're not going to have their main guy, Jonathan. Who is it? Can't remember his name now. Jonathan Brooks, but they're going to have Baxter. They're going to have Blue. They're going to have some of those guys. They're going to help try to mix things up and give Quinn Ewers enough opportunity so that he can take some deep shots off the play action to guys like Xavier Worthy.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, I don't know if you read Chip Brown. Chip Brown, one of the best people out there. He runs the Texas site on 24/7 Sports. But Chip wrote yesterday that they should just throw the ball at number 25, Elijah Jackson, until Washington makes some adjustments.
Well, I mean, you don't want to throw, if you're an opposing offense, why are you throwing it at Muhammad? You know, I mean, Jabbar Muhammad has been basically a shutdown guy. And, you know, he's looked outstanding the last half of the season. And you know, basically, I mean, I know he had played really well up until the Oregon State game. But that Oregon State game was when he served notice that I'm one of the best cover corners, not only in this conference, but in the country. And he's proven that over the last few weeks after the Oregon State game. And, you know, I would throw at Elijah Jackson. We've seen some breakdowns from Elijah throughout the season. We've seen some flashes of really good play on his part. But Adonai Mitchell, A.D. Mitchell, I mean, that guy's a big physical wide receiver who, am I correct? He has a chance to win his third straight national title. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was at Georgia. Yeah.
He was at Georgia. So this is his chance to win three straight national titles. Yeah. So he's a talented, talented guy. And for Texas to be able to put him opposite Xavier Worthy, and then you throw it to Jatavion Sanders in the middle, Washington's got a lot on their plate when it comes to covering that group. And then let's say you drop seven or eight into coverage. They're just going to hand the ball off to their three-headed monster that they have going there for them. So, I mean, it's a real tough task for what William Inge and Chuck Morrell have to scheme for and call this, you know, in this game. And I think it's really going to come down to, can Washington make them one-dimensional? If they can make them one-dimensional, and that's not easy to do, if they can make them one-dimensional, they got a chance to get their hands on some passes.
Yeah, Chris, when I think it was the Arizona State game, if I recall correctly, but they were abusing Jabbar Muhammad, just posting up the bigger receivers on him.
Yeah, Elijah Badger did, yeah.
Well, yeah, and A.D. Mitchell is 6'4". So, you know, that's the guy that you would think they would want to target against Jabbar Muhammad if that's kind of what their game plan is, just throw up the fades, throw up the 50-50 balls, and let the guy who's 6'4 go up against the guy who's 5'9". That seems like that would be the game plan, right?
You would think. Like I said, you know, that was a game where I think that we saw the holes in Jabbar Muhammad's game where he was, you know, really struggling against the larger receivers. But, Scott, you mentioned that three-headed monster at running back. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, so their top guy, like Chris mentioned, you know, went out, but they've got C.J. Baxter, who's a really good running back. They've got Keelan Robinson, who took over in the Big 12 championship game. And then Jaden Blue is a guy that a lot of people didn't even know about heading into the season. And all of a sudden he's their fourth running back, and he's their third best running back as far as totals are concerned, 56 carries, 339 yards, and two touchdowns. But, you know, Jonathan Brooks is a dynamic runner, and for him to be out of the lineup, a lot of people thought that was really going to hurt Texas, but they haven't seemed to miss a beat. They just, instead of one guy getting all the carries, it's split between Baxter, Blue, and Robinson, with Baxter being the main guy.
And Chris, what I think is going to be huge too is getting this extra time off and letting the bodies heal, specifically Asa Turner with the big club that he played with on his hand against Oregon. It was the size of the size of a football, what he had on his hand. And also, you know, Tuli Latula-Gassanoa could probably use the time off as well. But this is a really good chance for some of the guys on the defensive side of the ball to get healed and get their bodies back being right.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And we talked about Xavier Worthy and getting banged up in the Big 12 championship game, having him have a month to basically get better and try to heal his ankle. Well, Washington certainly has got those guys. You mentioned Asa Turner, you mentioned Tuli. There's going to be guys out there. I mean, Cam Fab just came back the last couple of games of the season. It's clearly time's going to really help him a lot. And just in general, even for the guys that were stalwarts in that defense, whether you're talking about a Braylon Trice or a Zion Tupuola-Fatui, or, you know, guys like Edifuan Ulufosio, or Alfonso Tupatala, Jabbar Muhammad, Elijah Jackson, all the guys that kind of played most of the year, all those guys are going to be banged up to a certain extent anyway. So getting 3 weeks to heal up and really kind of get the body refreshed and ready to go for this game is going to be huge. It's going to be huge, honestly, for both teams.
Yeah, and Scott, on the defensive side of the ball, it just seemed like there weren't a ton of injuries on the defensive side of the ball, which were long-term. The only long-term injury for the season was Mateo Mele on the offensive side of the ball. But the defensive side of the ball has maintained their health pretty well this year.
Well, yeah. I mean, you had Asa Turner and Cam Fabi-Kulanen, who both missed a lot of time. But for the most part, yeah, Kim, you're right. There hasn't been, you know, those long-term injuries. But, you know, Tuli was limited for a few weeks, and he showed his worth definitely as things kind of progressed during the season, especially during the Oregon State game. He was absolutely huge, stopping that potent Oregon State running game, and he helped with Utah a little bit too. But, you know, the last 2 weeks, you know, against Washington State and then against Oregon in the conference title game, I mean, he was huge. He was a big reason why. I think Oregon put up what, less than like 50 yards on the ground, right? Aside from the one long run by Bo Nix, you know, that was a game where the running backs just did nothing. And that's what Washington's going to need again, because Oregon's offensive line and Texas's offensive line are comparable. Texas is better, but Oregon's offensive line wasn't that bad, and they couldn't do anything against Washington, and it really helped that Washington got off to that fast start. And one thing I've heard some people talk about is depending on who wins the opening coin flip, Joel Klatt basically thought that either one, depending on no matter who wins the coin toss, should take the ball, because these offenses are so potent that they want to get out to that fast start.
Yeah, I agree.
Chris, when you start looking at the rotations where Washington starts substituting, you know, the defensive line, you're always going to have guys shuttle in, shuttle out, depending on the situation. But you've got Dominique Hampton playing the Husky. You're going to have Asa Turner. I'm sure you're going to see Cam Fab rotated in there. Elijah Jackson, I think you're going to see that spot see some rotation as well as the linebackers.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because we've seen situations this year where they've played Michelle Powell back at safety. We've seen situations where they've even put Jabbar Muhammad in the Husky in the slot corner. So they have versatility to move these guys around. And again, one of the key benefits from having so much time off and not just being able to heal, but allowing those guys to also get enough of those bodies in there where they can be multiple and versatile at the same time, which is going to be huge. So when you do rotate some of those guys, because one of the real facets of the defense that's been run by William Inge and Chuck Morrell, and you guys know this, is that when they get into those third and long, those kind of clear passing situations, then they basically run like all their edges in. And a guy like Vuitonuffi ends up being like playing at the nose. And so they have a lot of versatility there too. And now you add in a body like, you know, the Chuck Norris of Washington football, Zach Durfee. Who knows what Zach Durfee's going to do if they get into a third and long situation? Are they going to try to play him in the middle? Or are they going to try to play him as another edge guy to match up again with Braylon Trice and ZTF to see what they can do as a trio? There's a lot of versatility there. And getting that time off and getting the bodies healthy and getting everyone together on the same page is going to be huge, because I think having that kind of versatility, guys, is going to be really interesting against a really explosive Texas offense.
Hey, Scott, on the Texas coaching staff, you've got Jeff Choate as well as Pete Kwiatkowski, who know Scott Huff really, really well. But Scott Huff, where's the advantage? Those guys knowing what Scott Huff does, or Scott Huff knowing what those guys do? Do you think there's a little bit of an edge insider-wise either way?
I honestly, no. I mean, it isn't anything that they can't discover on game film and study and all that different stuff. But, you know, I think if there's any advantage, it's probably Huff knowing what Kwiatkowski and Choate want to do along that defensive front. Because maybe Scott Huff knows, hey, this is Kwiatkowski, PK's, tendency is to drop back in situations like this rather than send a blitz. And so maybe we don't look for a blitz in this situation. Maybe we look for something else and stuff like that. But I think a lot of it's just going to come down to game film study. And I mean, Ryan Grubb is the one who calls the plays. Scott Huff does his things. But, you know, when it comes to what Washington ends up doing with their motions and stuff like that, I think that's really a bigger key than what Scott Huff does and how he coaches his guys.
Hey, Kim, I have a couple things on this too. First of all, I think a lot of fans, both on Texas and Washington, would probably just say, well, wouldn't they just go back and look at the game film of the Alamo Bowl and just, you know, go back and look at that and say, okay, well, this is the personnel hasn't really changed all that much. And so Washington's probably got a great idea of what Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy and Sorrell and some of those other guys along the line, what they're going to do. And then conversely, the Texas guys are going to know what the Washington guys are going to be doing because all the skill guys came back and what have you. What the interesting matchup is going to be, and I think even Jeff Choate talked about this with you, is that the interior three for Washington are completely different than they were last year. You know, and so instead of having Jackson Kirkland, Corey Luciano, and Henry Bainivalu, now you've got Nate Kaleppo, Parker Brailsford, and Julius Bulow. And so the Texas guys only have this year's worth of film, whereas Scott Huff can not only go back and look at that game and look at whatever they were doing last year in terms of what Texas's defensive line does, but now he's got all the 2023 tape as well because the personnel really hasn't changed all that much.
Yeah, you know, so when you take a look at that Texas front seven, that's what everybody's talking about, and the secondary maybe being their weak link, ranking number 94 in the country. But I think, Scott, sometimes those statistics can be deceiving where their defense might be giving up a lot more passing yards because they've been ahead the whole year. And some of the early games where your teams are constantly playing from behind and having to pass the ball, I think sometimes those numbers get skewed.
Yeah, they can. A lot of it's just, you know, you need to look at it situationally and you got to have it in context and everything like that. But, aside from that, you know, you just got to, you know, deal with the fact that, there's going to be things that we don't really see and not sure. You know, when you just look at the stats, they can tell you one thing. And like Chris Peterson said, stats are for losers at times. You know, if you just rely on the stats rather than knowing the context of why things happen and what they were doing, that's when that can get you in trouble. I don't see the coaches doing that, but that can be the case.
Yeah, it's just like the Michigan State game. Washington was well ahead and they're putting in a lot of their reserves. And Michigan State ran up a lot of yards against the reserves, and the same in the first couple of games when the second and third teams were running in. But you know, what's going to be interesting to keep an eye on. I was more concerned earlier in the week than I am now is those two big interior tackles. But it seems like I think Washington's going to have a pretty good game plan again against them, Chris, because I honestly think what they're going to do is I think Washington's going to come out and throw the ball a lot, and then they'll run the ball a little bit later in the game when those guys are a little bit not as fresh.
I think there's an aspect of that that's in play too, Kim. And I'd also go back and say not only did Texas also kind of been so far ahead that teams had to throw the ball a lot, but I think Texas also did a really good job of just shutting the other team's run game out completely. I mean, there's only one game where Texas gave up more than 200 yards on the ground, and that was the Oklahoma game. And I think a lot of Washington fans are saying, well, to win this game today, we've got to follow the Oklahoma blueprint. We got to balance the pass and the run. We've got to be able to make those key plays. We've got to be able to do some of those other things that Oklahoma was able to have success with. And so I think there's that too. But yeah, really when it comes down to it, I think tempo is going to be really key in this game today, because I think Washington isn't really a high tempo team. Like, they're just not going to try to tempo teams to death. But what Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb and the offensive coaches have said all year long, and you guys know this, they want to use tempo to their advantage. And sometimes that means going up tempo a little bit and then shifting gears a little bit, slowing it down, and then going back tempo a little bit just to try to get that little edge here and there. I think the reason they'll run tempo a little bit more today is because they want to get both Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat on skates. They want to get those guys running, not just sideline to sideline, but everywhere on every down.
Yeah, it just seems like what Washington has done, and I think they're going to do it today as well, is if they have a chunk play where those big linemen have had to run quite a bit on one specific play, that's typically when they would run tempo. And I expect them, if they can get a fly sweep with 20-yard fly sweep, that expect them to get up to the line of scrimmage, not only to tempo, but not to allow them to bring in defensive substitutions. And I think that's where you're going to see the tempo, Chris.
Yeah, and I think keeping with the same receiver core, you know, having the situation where Rome and both Jalen's are in there pretty much all the time to not allow those subs, I think is another key that we should look at today to see what happens. But yes, I mean, taking advantage of those types of opportunities is key. And I think people will realize that pretty much during the course of the year, when they have tried to switch gears a little bit and use some up-tempo, it hasn't really been like super successful for them. But I think in this case, over the course of the game, like if they start doing it early and they're very, you know, not consistent, but if they find their moments to really try to get these guys on skates and get these guys gassed a little bit here and there, I think by the fourth quarter, that's something where even in the micro, if the up-tempo didn't necessarily pay dividends on that next down or that previous down, I think over time in the fourth quarter, that's when it'll show up.
And that's where I think Washington, if they've got the lead or, if it's a tie game, you know, in the fourth quarter is when you're going to see the running game emerge for Washington.
Yeah, it's been that way. I mean, we've seen not only Dylan Johnson get stronger and stronger as the year's gone on, but I think over the course of each particular game, the Washington offensive line has continued to get stronger in the run game, and that's allowed Dylan Johnson to continue to use kind of his bruising and battling mentality and physicality to eventually kind of break teams down in the fourth quarter.
And Scott, we've seen this all year long. Washington has gone into some places where the Utah defense was supposed to be outstanding and the offense would struggle against Utah in the Oregon game, Oregon's vaunted defense, and Oregon's vaunted defense again in the championship football game. But when you take a look at the defenses, well, first of all, just real quick, just don't explain, which defense do you think is better, Oregon or Texas?
Well, who's the DCs? Tox LePoy? Versus Pete Kwiatkowski?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I have nothing against Tosh LuPoy as a person. I just don't think he's that good of a DC. I think Texas defense is much better.
One thing I'd add real quick, guys, when you look at scoring defense statistically in terms of in the entire NCAA, Oregon and Texas are literally 11th and 12th in total scoring defense. Oregon is at 17.3 points per game. Texas is at 17.5. So even though I think Scott's 100% correct. I agree totally in terms of the coaching aspect of the of each defense. I think there's probably some decent comparisons that can be made between Texas and Oregon defensively. Yep.
Scott, getting back to it, you know, when you talk about the defenses that people thought Washington would struggle against, you know, the only game that they really struggled on offense was probably the Arizona State game and, you know, maybe the Stanford game a little bit. And that was that 2-week period where they were just ravaged by the flu, if not COVID, where guys weren't practicing because they had to stay away from other guys. So I think those are the only two times that Washington's offense has really struggled. And, you know, you take these national people and the people who cover football, they all expected Washington to struggle against those defenses, and they didn't. And I'm hearing some of the same stuff where, you know, comparing Texas defenses and what Washington has faced so far this year.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Washington so far, I mean, you look at Byron Murphy, you look at Tevondre Sweat, and Washington has not faced two defensive linemen like that yet this year. Maybe they've faced one that's like those guys, but not two on the same team and at the exact same time. But that being said, Washington has handled a big physical defensive line, like you said, Kim, with Utah, also with Oregon twice. I mean, Brandon Dorlus is going to be if he's not a, you know, first rounder, he's a, you know, early second day guy. I mean, he's a big physical guy who can run. Who's the guy who got, that they got, the edge guy that they brought in that was like 6'5" and 285 pounds, and they got an edge guy like that was their top sack guy.
Oh, Jordan Birch?
Yeah, Jordan Birch. And I mean, those are two really talented guys that Washington had to face and deal with. So I think Washington, look, I get it. You look at Tevondre Sweat, you look at Parker Brailsford going up against each other. Does anyone really think that they're going to make Parker Brailsford blocked Tevondre Sweat by himself?
No.
I mean, come on. That's going to be Bulo double teaming. That's going to be Nate Kaleppo double teaming with him. It's not, they're not dumb enough to do that. And besides that, Parker Brailsford, from everything I've heard, is technically and from a technique standpoint and all that different stuff, he is elite when it comes to the way he uses leverage. So I'm not saying he's going to dominate Tevondre Sweat. I don't think anybody's dominated him, and that's why he won the Outland Trophy this year. But yeah. I really think that people are discounting that Washington can scheme not to allow Brailsford to have to face that guy one-on-one.
And Chris, the Utah game, you know, they had an edge that, you know, would put up big numbers, and his name didn't get mentioned much in that game.
Oh yeah, Ellis. No, Ellis for sure. They shut him down, and that's the thing. It's Texas's edges are good, but they aren't necessarily different than what Washington has faced, which kind of goes to Scott's point. Sweat and Murphy together are going to be combining to be a little different than what Washington's seen all year long. But ultimately, yeah, it comes down to, you know, as a whole. Because if you break it down schematically, you're expecting Washington's middle three to handle those two. So you've got a 3-on-2 situation. So if they're, you know, depending on what kind of games they're going to run and things like that. And so that leaves basically Troy Faltanu and Roger Rosengarten out on an island with Dylan Johnson to be able to pass protect at times. And I think we saw, especially in that Pac-12 championship game, guys, Dylan Johnson's pass protection was almost as important as his running. And what they were able to do is they were able to take advantage of Tosh Lapoy's aggressiveness and his want to blitz and try to create havoc to Michael Penix. And they were able to take shots over the top because of that. What I want to find out tonight.
Hey, Chris, real quick. You always said last year that you thought that Wayne Talapapa was the best running back for blocking and pass pro that you'd seen. How does Dylan Johnson compare to Wayne Talapapa?
Well, no, he's right there. But I'd say all of them are very comparable to some of the other guys we've seen, whether it was LeVon Coleman, Miles Gaskin, even Savon Ahmed got better and better as his career went on. But bottom line, guys, is that at some point we're going to have to figure out tonight, is PK going to be as aggressive as Tosh Lapoy in trying to heat up Michael Penix? And if he does, can the Washington front hold up and make him pay for making those decisions?
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I think is going to be key on offense too, you got all your wide receivers back. You've got your three with Polk, Odunze, and McMillan. McMillan's 100%. And then guy we haven't seen much, but has made some real key plays in the four games he's played in. You've got Giles Jackson. You've got Jeremy Bernard, which I think Jeremy's going to get the ball a couple of times on some fly sweeps, as well as Denzel Boston. They've got their full complement of the wide receivers back.
They do. And a big key is really going to be Michael Penix being patient and not trying to go over the top. Now that he's got all of his guys, it's going to be real hard for Texas to double up and bracket guys. But early on, Pete Kwiatkowski loves that two deep zone. That's what he loves to run. He doesn't like anything getting over the top of him, and he wants to keep everything in front. Well, Washington is used to that explosive play. They really like to hit those explosive plays. And so Penix is going to have to be patient and pick and choose his spots. And when he gets a chance to take a shot, he needs to make it count. And I think with the rest, I think with the fact that all three guys are back and 100% healthy, and you throw in a Jeremy Bernard, who I think a lot of people are underrating. That guy, so you're Texas, you D up Washington's top three guys. Now you got to deal with a guy who can run like a running back. Once he gets the ball in his hands, I mean, that guy is physical as a wide receiver. I'm not saying he's Debo Samuel, but he's got that kind of a game where, you know, you get him a ball on a short pass or on a sweep or something like that. And you just let him go to town and make moves in the open field, but also be physical with guys. And that's what I want to see from Washington, is not only taking advantage of what they can do with their top three guys who everybody thinks about, but also getting something for Jeremy Bernard, who I think could be a difference maker for the Husky defense or Husky offense.
Hey, Chris, give me a key matchup defensively for Texas. What do you think the key matchup is for Texas?
Well, I think one of the things that we learned a little bit, and we learned this week because of the brotherly connection, is the connection between Jabbar Muhammad and his brother, the true freshman, Texas DB Malik Muhammad. And Malik actually started the Big 12 championship game. So is Washington now, do they spot an opening? Is Malik Muhammad going to start the game tonight as a true freshman at corner? Is that something that they can exploit? Because I know everyone's talking about the, you know, they've lost their safety, one of their safeties for the first half of the game because he got targeting and he got ejected from the Big 12 championship game. So he misses the first half of tonight's game. What can they exploit that? I see that. But also with Malik Muhammad starting the game against Oklahoma State, does that mean that he starts tonight against one of these receivers? And whether it's Odunze, McMillan, Polk, whoever, is that a guy that they can heat up a little bit because of his inexperience? I mean, he's a true freshman. I mean, that tells you one thing about how talented Texas is, for starters, right? That they're starting guys that are true freshmen in a game of this magnitude, potentially. But the other thing is that there's never you can't substitute experience, and these guys should have an opportunity to maybe take advantage of that if he starts.
Give me a key matchup, Scott.
Well, their leading tackler is Jalen Ford, the linebacker, and, you know, 91 tackles. He doesn't get in and get a lot of penetration, but he, you know, 91 tackles, couple pass breakups and an interception. I think if you can get Dylan Johnson or, you know, maybe one of the other running backs isolated on him, or even get Jeremy Bernard, you know, line him up in the backfield and make Jalen Ford cover Jeremy Bernard. I think that's going to be big for Washington to be able to make some yards and make some big plays. And for Texas, it's going to be Jalen Ford being able to be that tackle guy who doesn't have to take on, you know, blockers at the, you know, the offensive linemen getting to the next level, because he's got Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat in front of him. And so I think that's going to be huge for Texas in order to keep Washington's offensive line off of Jalen Ford and let Jalen Ford kind of do his thing.
Yeah, and the key matchup that I'm really looking forward to is the Texas linebackers, because I think that they're going to pay a lot of attention to those three Washington wide receivers. And I think there's going to be some real opportunities with the tight end screens over the middle. And Dylan Johnson hasn't had as many passes thrown to him this year as I anticipated. I wouldn't be surprised to see more throws to Dylan Johnson out of the backfield to try to suck those guys up to open things up deep. But, you know, like I said, Scott or Chris, I was expecting Dylan Johnson to catch the ball a lot more this year, and I think this might be the game where we see that.
Yeah, it's all been rope-a-dope, Kim. 13 straight games.
You joke about that, Scott, but there may be something to that, and here's the reason why I say that. Let's go back to the Pac-12 championship game. We've talked ad nauseum all season long about all the skill positions at Michael Penix's disposal. And that also means Ryan Grubb. Ryan Grubb has all these guys he can paint with, all these guys in his arsenal. Who's the guy that he goes to for the game-winning touchdown? Quentin Moore.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you guys, there is going to be someone tonight in that arsenal that we haven't talked about. Because is anyone going to be surprised if Rome Odunze gets his yards? Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk, or even a Jack Westover. Who is going to be surprised if Dylan Johnson gets his yards? Yeah. Could it be a Josh Cuevas? Could it be Devin Culp coming back on the scene and having a couple big stabs like he's had all year long, but it hasn't necessarily been like a real consistent thing? Could it be another one of the running backs? Could it be Will Nixon? Could it be a Sam Adams? Could Richard Newton rise from the dead and have a couple of huge plays to salt the game away, maybe at the end when they need a big bruising running back to get a first down?
Could Daniel Nada have a kick return? Because he's been pretty effective back there.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that Ryan Grubb, I'm not saying that this is necessarily his MO, but he, and this really all stems from Kalen DeBoer and just the trust and the brotherhood that they have in this whole team and their preparation. They feel like anybody they use can make a big play at any time. And they proved that in the Big 12 championship game by calling Quentin Moore's number, and he came up and delivered. So it really, at this point, who's going to be that guy? Because I think there could be another one of those types of guys that makes a huge play when it matters today.
And Scott, the reason I brought up Dylan Johnson out of the backfield, Dylan Johnson had more career receptions at the beginning of the year than Rome Odunze and Jalen McMillan. He had more catches than any of those guys.
Yeah, I know. You mean heading into the season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And that kind of shocked a lot of people. But he also was in the air raid offense, too. So,
it just shows that he can catch the ball. That's
absolutely. Absolutely shows that he can catch the ball. And but Washington hasn't needed him for that. They've needed him to be healthy to run the ball. And that's what they've used him for. And so, you know, he did have a nice little outlet pass that when Michael was looking for somebody when he was under pressure against Oregon, and nice little outlet pass. But he is not a primary receiver in Washington's offense this year, which, like you said, Kim, a lot of us thought he would see a lot more passes.
Yeah, and that's why I think we could see some of these swing passes, you know, where the passes into the backfield to Jeremy Bernard, Rome Odunze, where they're basically runs and getting those defensive linemen running sideline to sideline.
Kim, you know what you're telegraphing this right now. You know the play they're going to run tonight based on this whole conversation that we've had about Dylan Johnson, right? You know what's coming.
The fumble Ruski?
No, double pass.
Yeah.
You talk about him catching the ball. Well, obviously the play off of that is to throw the ball.
Well,
that's what he's going to do.
One of my favorite plays from the Pac-12 championship game was where he hands it off to Dylan. I'm pretty sure he handed it off to Dylan Johnson, who then handed it off to Rome Odunze, who then pitched it back to Michael Penix. And then he threw it to Rome Odunze. I mean, it was
like a flea flicker screen.
Yeah, but it ended up being a screen, and he had a ton of beef out in front of him. All the entire offensive line was right in front of him, and he ended up getting a first down, but he only got like 11 or 12 yards, and it looked like he could have gone all the way. That's a play that I would love to see them run again, and this time execute it just a little bit better.
Hey, Scott, do you remember the first play in the Alamo Bowl for Washington on offense last year?
Yes, it was a flea flicker to Jalen Polk.
How long is it going to take for us to see a trick play? Because I can promise you there's going
first,
to
be. I think it'll happen on the first drive.
Guys, let's also remember the kind of stuff that who was the offensive coordinator in the 2016 Peach Bowl? Was that Hamden?
No, 16 was Jonathan Smith.
Okay, so if it was Jonathan Smith, think about the drive that Washington did against Alabama when they scored on that first or second drive, whatever it was, very early first quarter drive. They basically threw almost every trick play that they had in their arsenal to try to get down the field. I'm not saying that's what Washington's going to do tonight against Texas, because first of all, I think this Washington offense is just a lot more aligned, and I think they match up better with this Texas defense. That said, it is kind of symbolic of Grubb. I mean, he kind of uses it. It's, again, not his MO, but he does like to put his imprint on things early in terms of kind of getting the defense off balance, having them look one way and seeing something else entirely.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Two more questions for each of you. Just Chris Vetters, what does Washington have to do to win this game?
Well, that's the question, right? It's a loaded one, but that is the question. And I think really when it comes down to it, everyone's talked about how well matched these two teams are. Everyone thinks it's going to be a shootout. But yet, if you look at the numbers, Washington is the only defense that's really given up a ton of points. I mean, Texas has really only given up 30 points, I think, a few times this year. And they haven't given up 40. They haven't even, I think, 34, the Oklahoma game, 34 is the most they've given up all year. So if Washington does explode for 40-plus points, it'll be something that Texas has not done all year long, which I'm not saying it's not possible. It certainly is possible, but I wouldn't necessarily bank on it. So I would, again, assume that this is going to be another tight game for Washington. It'll be the 10th one in a row that would probably be figured out and have a result that's in single digits, right? And they're going to have to take this all the way to the fourth quarter, guys, which means they've got to play field position. They can't turn the ball over. They've got to find some balance on offense with Dylan Johnson running the ball, and then Penix having a better game against Texas this year than he did last year.
And what's it?
He didn't have a great game in the Alamo Bowl. He found a way to win, but he did not have a great game, and I'm sure that's something that he thinks about.
And if Washington loses this game, what's going to be the issue? What's going to be the thing that they just couldn't accomplish other than the scoreboard?
Short fields, turning the ball over, some things that are just, you know, when they didn't win the game, you lost the game, those types of things that happen. And frankly, Texas hitting them in the mouth early and Washington not being able to recover. Because I think one thing that we know about this Washington team, guys, and I think it's absolutely unquestioned, is that they will fight till the end regardless. I don't care if you're up three scores, down three scores, it doesn't matter. These guys are too experienced, and they've been coached too well to just throw in the towel when things get rough, because things have been rough for them all year long, and they've bounced back every single time. But I do think it goes back to the coin toss, Kim. It goes back to the coin toss. If Texas wins the coin toss and they take the ball and they score and they force a three and out, maybe they score again and it's 14-0 in the middle of the first quarter, you know, can Washington come back from something like that? I don't know. I mean, this is a different animal. I mean, no matter what happens, they have not really faced that kind of adversity this year. They've faced some, but they haven't faced adversity quite like that.
And Scott, if Washington loses this game, why do they lose this game?
If they lose this game, it's because the defense couldn't get off the field. That's really the thing. It's going to be it's really going to come down to possessions. And if Washington can get, I don't know, I should have looked this up, but what they've averaged for possessions per game, I'm going to guess it's somewhere in the 8 to 10 range, somewhere around there. If Texas is allowed to run the ball and continue just pounding the ball on Washington and keep the ball away from Washington, and if, you know, Texas has a 38-22 lead on Washington when it comes to time of possession. I think that's really going to be what costs Washington this game. I'm not saying this is going to be an easy game for Washington offensively or anything like that, but I think Washington, I will be surprised if Washington scores less than 30 points in this game. And if they score less than 30 points in this game, I think Texas is going to end up winning it. But I think really when it comes down to it, if Washington is able to get off the field on third downs, Kim, like you said, if they're able to get Texas into those long, you know, behind the sticks where they're, you know, third and seven, third and eight, whatever it is, if they're able to do that, I think Washington's going to have a lot better chance to win this game than they would if they didn't do that.
And if they win this game, you know, what's the big thing that's going to cause them to win this?
Well, scoring more points. I'm just kidding. But really, it's going to come down to Michael Penix executing, the offensive line keeping Michael Penix up. I think there's a lot of opportunities for Washington to make some big plays in this game. I love Pete Kwiatkowski. I love what he does as a defensive coordinator. But Washington, you know, I think has the ability to make some big plays on this defense. And there, if there's anything that's tough on these guys, it's their secondary. Their front seven is really good. Their secondary is mediocre, in my opinion. And I think Washington can make some plays, especially when Washington has arguably the best wide receiver group in the entire country. And if they can keep Michael Penix up and not, you know, give him a clean pocket where he doesn't have guys around his legs or guys hitting his arm or hitting him as he's making a throw. If they can do that, I think that Washington's going to score 35, 40 points. And if that happens, I think Washington wins this game.
Yeah, I think the key, again, like you said, that third down when they've got, you know, the chunk yards where it's third and eight and they're able to run the ball 7 yards and get a fourth and one and then convert a fourth and one. I think the key to Washington winning this game is to the defense to be able to get some stops on third down, but not only get the stop on third down, but when they get the ball back on that third down and convert those into points and get that momentum going on their side. I think Washington is a much better team. I think Texas playing from behind might be a little bit of an issue for them, and it's going to get them out of their game plan a little bit. So if Washington can get those extra possessions by getting those third down stops, I think it's going to be key. And if Washington wins this game, I'm telling you guys right now why, you know, how they're going to win this game, I don't think we know. They just seem to find a way to win every time. And it's been, you know, I've had two or three games this year where I didn't think they were going to win the game. We're getting down to the fourth quarter and I think the game is lost. And they just pull that rabbit out of the hat and they find a way. And as Coach DeBoer says, they're built for this and they just seem to find a way. So I think it's going to be like reading a book and you get to that final chapter in the fourth quarter and you think they're going to pull it out. You think they're going to pull it out and it looks like it's not going to happen. And by the time you get to that last page, they pulled something out. And I can see Washington doing that again today. So that's what makes this game so much fun, especially this year. So,
yeah.
And just to add some context to that third down discussion you guys just had, Washington has a top 10 third down conversion offense. And they're converting at about a 48% rate. Texas, number two in the country in third down defense, around 26%. That could be the difference right there, as you guys mentioned.
Yeah, it'll be key. So let's go ahead and wrap this up. Chris Vetter, final thoughts?
Yeah, I'm just like super excited today. I mean, it doesn't feel like it ever was going to come. And I'm sure, Kim, you being down in New Orleans probably really felt it was never going to come. It felt like it was probably just work, 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 work. And what's the end product? Well, today's the end product. Today we get to see who gets to play for the national championship. And couldn't be more excited to see what happens with these guys. And, you know, bottom line is they've earned this. I mean, they've absolutely earned the right. I mean, everyone looked at that Georgia-Florida State game. And, boy, in hindsight, it certainly looks like, you know, it's hard to take that thing in a nutshell, but just on its own. But in terms of being unbeaten in a power conference, winning your championship, beating the top team in your conference that everyone expected you to lose to twice, absolutely have earned this right to play this game tonight. And it's just ironic that they're playing the team that they beat in the bowl game last year. And so you just got to go out and do it again. So I think it's going to be fantastic to watch. Two great match teams. I think a lot has been obviously spilled in terms of the ink on this game, but couldn't be more excited and thrilled to see what happens.
Scott Eklund, wrap it up.
Echo a lot of what Chris says. I just think it's going to come down to you know, Washington making plays when they have the opportunity on both sides of the ball. It's really going to be, I think these teams are very evenly matched. That's one great thing about this college football playoff that a lot of people have talked about. I'm not coming up with anything new, but I don't think there is a team in this college football playoff that people don't think could win the title. And this is very evenly matched, not just between Washington and Texas, but Alabama and Michigan as well. I'm just having fun. This is just, you know, I'm like a, you know, pig in poop, you know, I mean, just enjoying watching this team. You know, I was a student at the University of Washington in 1991. We expected that team to be really great and be an elite team and possibly win a national title. I don't think any of us, I think all of us thought that Washington had the chance to be a Pac-12 championship team, but I don't think any of us saw them being the number two rated team in the country, 13-0 at this point, just all the different things that they are. And I'm really, really surprised that we are where we are. And I think Husky fans really need to enjoy this. It has been 32 years since Washington has been in this position, and enjoy this because it might not happen again for another 30 years. We just don't know.
Yeah, it's a win or lose. It's been a magical season, and it's going to be one that Husky fans shouldn't forget. And whether they win or lose this game, I hope Husky fans can remain humble in the win going in against the winner of Michigan, Alabama. And I hope we don't see the toxicity that we have seen at points this year, because this has been truly a magical season and one that we're all going to remember. The thing that's kind of making me crazy, and I know it's making the team crazy, is, boy, the Rose Bowl would have started at 2:00, but now we don't start till late. So these guys sitting around the hotel all day long, I'm guessing that they're, I'd much rather have that earlier game than the later game, but that just seems what the Pac-12 does. They get the late games for everything.
Yeah.
Well, and guys, there's also the hockey game today.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we got the Kraken playing at T-Mobile today. Yeah. So that there's all sorts of stuff going on as far as if you're a Seattle sports fan. You're going to be right in front of the TV basically all day long. One thing I did want to add real quick, Kim, and we talked a little bit about this off air, and I don't know if I should be tempting fate with this, because you mentioned that if Washington wins, being humble and playing the winner of the Rose Bowl between Michigan and Alabama, who do you guys want to see in that game? If Washington makes it to Houston, who do you want to see?
I would much rather see Michigan than Alabama.
I'd rather see Michigan, because Washington has them on the schedule, and boy, that would be a game to be circled next year.
Yes, it would. It would. I just, my big thing is, you know, the quarterback from Alabama. I think he would cause Washington a lot of problems with his mobility. Washington's always struggled with quarterbacks with mobility. Granted, they hemmed in Caleb Williams, who is probably even more dynamic of a runner than Jalen Milroe, but. I don't want any part of an Alabama team that's playing well down the stretch. I'd much rather see Michigan, who has a lot of playmakers and a lot of toughness, but they also might not have their coach, and that could be distraction.
Yeah, and a big shout out to you guys. I know that, you know, me with my ADD and being able to multitask and do 10 things at once, I know I've been feeding you guys so much content, and you guys have crushed it this week. And I know it hasn't been easy. It's just been like drinking water through a fire hose. I don't think there's been a week where we've produced as much content as we have this week. And I know you guys have just been crushing it, and I've been running pretty hard down here. Sometimes it doesn't seem like it, but there's a lot going on down here. So I got a little bit of playtime last night. You know, been out to a couple of really good dinners, but I've been pretty much going. You can probably hear it a little bit in my voice.
In your voice, yeah, definitely.
No, I've been going. So, and then, you know, if Washington wins tonight, boy, I got some decisions to make. Do I get on the plane and head back to Seattle, or do I head back to Houston, you know, right away? So I've got some decisions to make depending on the outcome of this game. So pray for me. So
let's hope that decision has to be made.
Yeah, so it might get kind of wild, but, you know, I'm just the king of winging it. I always make it work out. So,
well, we can talk about it a little later tonight in the post game podcast.
Yeah, what I'm going to do. So I might be multitasking with flights a little bit later tonight. So anyways, hey, just thanks to you guys. I appreciate you. And I'm sure all the Husky fans that are listening to the podcast trust you as well as our interns, intern Josh, former intern Jack McCauley, former intern Luke Munger, who help us out quite a bit. So, you know, just big thanks to everybody involved in Dogman.com, in front of the scenes, behind the scenes, and, you know, just the loyal subscribers, because we've got so many subscribers that have been here for 20 years. So it's pretty awesome. So, hey, for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnells, along with Chris Fetters, Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.